Get a job.
Work hard.
And one day you can retire and do the things you want.
That's the typical formula for daily life in the modern world.
And it works for lots of people. This kind of life is perfect.
But it's not for us. And I'm guessing that it's not for you either.
I'm David Allan Patali.
And I'm Carmen Allan Patali. And together we run the content company Red Platypus.
I'm also a published fiction author.
And we have two young daughters who keep us on our toes.
We've both said no to well-paid jobs in favour of pursuing our creative paths. And we want to walk them with you.
Freelancer, digital nomad, artist, creative, self-employed. Whatever you want to call it, if you work for yourself and want to keep it that way, or want to be free from the 9 to 5 and don't know where to start, we want to help.
We're going on a journey to speak to committed creatives, people who are all in, who have made highly successful businesses out of their creativity, and ask them how they do it while retaining the magic.
Because while we think inspiration is good, we've come to learn that process is vital.
Welcome to the Committed Creative Podcast, your toolkit for the creative life you want.
Here's to going all in and becoming a committed creative. Wow. Episode 9 of the Committed Creative Podcast today. I can't believe we're nearly in the double digits. Aside from celebrating the duration of the Committed Creative Podcast, I'd also like to mention International Women's Day, which was on Tuesday, and give a quick shout out to all the amazing creative women out there running their own businesses and creating impact around the world. It's only fitting that we have an interview with an amazing creative businesswoman today, and so I'm hosting Farina Cheng on the podcast for an all-woman chat. Thanks for joining. Farina Cheng is a talented jewelry designer who has built up an impressive business after leaving her corporate job and following her true creative passion. If you look at her website, you'll see how different her jewelry is to your standard engagement ring and why she works on a commission-only basis. In this episode of The Committed Creative, I talk to Farina about how she got the courage to quit her corporate job, how she built up her client list, the feeling she gets when she creates sentimental pieces for clients who fall in love with her designs, and how she juggles being a new mum with business ownership. Let's get stuck in. Hi, Farina, and welcome to The Committed Creative. We're so happy you could be here with us today.
Hi. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. So maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about yourself, because your jewelry is absolutely gorgeous. And just tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to be a jewelry maker.
Okay, so I never thought that I would be a jeweler. I studied media and communications at uni. After uni, I started working in a marketing job and thought that was it for the rest of my life. But I guess it just never really, you know, I feel like you spend your whole life working towards something, you know, like graduating from the 8th grade and going to 9th grade, graduating from, you know, high school, going to uni.
It's almost like your path is mapped out for you.
Yeah. And then, you know, for me, it was like, oh, you get a job and, you know, what's next? I didn't feel like I really wanted to kind of climb the corporate ladder and achieve big things that way. So, but I guess, you know, I didn't mind working in an office. I ended up working long hours and I wanted to find a way to get out of the office on time, at least once a week. So I started looking into short courses, and I was tossing up between clothes making and jewelry making, which both appealed to me. I thought the clothes making element of it would be a lot more practical, but I just couldn't kind of get past that whole idea of jewelry and that kind of mystery for me about how metal was manipulated into all of these different shapes that I just had I couldn't picture in my head. So jewelry making it was, And I took a short class at a community center, just, you know, 15 minutes from my house. And it was in that first lesson that I kind of realized that, like, I thought, oh, this is great. I can actually make pieces of jewelry. It made me, I just thought that this was kind of exactly what I wanted to do. And jewelry designer had like a great ring to it, I thought. So I ended up looking into qualifications for jewelry design and took a 2-year course in jewelry and object design, which was really conceptual and kind of pushed the boundaries a little bit on what jewelry was. And then after that, I took a 3-year course in jewelry manufacture, which really was very practical. And, you know, an engagement ring has a stone in the center and it might have 2 stones on the other side, if you wanted to be really creative. And kind of fused both of those elements together. So what I kind of specialize in now is kind of unconventional jewelry for what I call rule breakers and story makers.
I love that.
So people who don't necessarily want, you know, those kind of big blingy diamond engagement rings don't appeal to them. They want something a little bit different. They want something with a story. I guess because a piece of jewelry is, you know, it can be beautiful by itself, but for me, it's not really special until it's got some kind of meaning imbued into it. Yeah, so that's kind of how I started doing those short course at the community center, and then jewelry qualifications. And then initially I was doing, you know, small pieces of jewelry that I'd sell at markets and, you know, like a small production range where I'd make multiples of items. And then it wasn't until maybe 1 or 2 years in that custom jewelry really, you know, started to stand out to me. And it was because of that ability to work really closely with an individual and create something based on their story rather than you know, a piece of jewelry that was pretty but didn't necessarily mean something specific to someone.
I love that the slogan for your business for Rebel Makers and Storytellers. Is that
Rule Breakers?
Rule Breakers.
Story Makers.
Yeah, and so Story Makers. I love that that slogan. It almost like defines your niche already, and that people know what you're about because your jewelry is so different and it does, every piece is unique and does tell a story. I love that you've incorporated that into your slogan. How did you go about finding the first few customers for your business? Was it through the market stalls that you held or online? Where did your customer base come from?
So long ago that I... I probably initially started selling to friends, my mum. And then, you know, I started my Facebook page and kind of slowly and quite organically it grew from there. So I've never really been big on advertising. It's probably because I just don't do it all don't do it all that well. But it's been very much organic growth for me. Social media, through the website, and then generally people telling other people or customers coming back for more.
That's great. And you talked about how you left your corporate job because, well, one of the reasons was because of the hours. What kind of hours do you keep these days?
Probably worse hours than but I feel like that would be a common story with you know, people who work for themselves. It's something that, you know, I once was proud of, that I used to work really long hours. I've actually, so last year I had a baby and...
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. It's actually forced me to work a lot less than I used to because I could work. So previously, you know, at a corporate job, I would say work from 8:30 in the morning till maybe 7:30 at night. And when I was working for myself pre-baby, when I could do, you know, when I could work anytime I wanted.
You had freedom.
Exactly. I was working, you know, maybe from 7 a.m. till, you know, 11 or 12.
Yeah.
So any time where I wasn't eating or showering.
Or sleeping,
I was working.
At least it was for yourself, though, because, you know, when you do the hard slog, but it's for someone else, you know, you can start to feel resentment. But if you're building your dream working long hours, it doesn't feel as icky,
exactly.
I guess.
And I really enjoyed it. So all the work I was doing, I felt quite motivated to do.
Yeah.
But now knowing that I can work less and still do the same amount of work, I'm starting to realize, and I don't know how it's taken me this long, that it's not really about putting in as many hours as you possibly can, because the work kind of expands to fill the time that you've got. So I was working a lot, but not very efficiently. And I was doing a lot of things that weren't necessarily that productive. So for example, I was doing some markets, not a lot of markets, but because I do about maybe 3 or 4 markets a year, focusing on the bigger kind of independent design markets.
Yeah.
But because I was doing markets so infrequently, every single time I did a market, I had to kind of almost, you know, create the stock from scratch. I'd set up my display the night before, you know, I'd do like a whole trial run and set everything up. And it was highly, highly inefficient. And so last year I decided, conveniently, it was when COVID hit, I decided not to do markets anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's been, for me personally, that's been a really, really good decision where I've been able to focus that time on working more with custom pieces with individual customers.
And so it almost helped you to niche down in a way.
Yeah. Well,
you focused on your strengths.
Focus a lot more, be a lot more selective about what I said yes to.
Yes.
You know, set up some stronger boundaries.
Yes.
Whereas before I'd go, oh, look, oh, there's this little market happening here. Maybe I'll give it a go and I'll see what happens, even though I kind of knew it wasn't going to be a very popular one or it wasn't very well promoted.
Yeah.
You know, I just go, oh, look, I'm not doing anything. I might as well just just have a go, spend 10 hours kind of setting up and practicing for it.
And how do you find the juggle with motherhood and running a business? How's that been for you?
It's been, I would say the day-to-day is harder, but overall I've been able to see how much more efficient I can be. I'm trying to focus on all the positive things here. I can see how much more efficient it's made me. It's made me really assess what matters and what I should be focusing on. And so in general, I think it's been positive, although quite stressful. Because
do you have help with childcare?
Not at the moment, but he is starting in 2 weeks.
I bet you're counting the days.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it, actually, because it's it just felt like the right time. I kind of pushed it out, and then at the end of last year, which was very recent, So at the end of 2021, I just went, oh, look, I think it's the right time. I'm going to send him to childcare by myself 2 full days and achieve lots of big things.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, because when they're at home, even though it would be in an ideal world, it'd be great to work with your kids at home. But for me personally, I find it's you can never give your full attention either to your child or to your work, and it's always your attention split everywhere and can be exhausting.
For me, it's impossible to work while he's awake. So
yes, that's it.
it's all, you know, during nap times.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I want to just dive a bit into the storytelling aspect of the business, because I was reading on your website, beautiful story about a woman who came to you with her mother had recently passed away of cancer, and she wanted to honour her by taking her numerous pieces from her mum's jewellery collection and turn it into a ring. And you made this stunning ring that is so unique. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Oh, thank you.
And it's just so sentimental. And I guess being a jeweler, it's quite, you know, jewelry always is sentimental, as you know, people get it for special occasions to make memories. How do you help to tell your client stories, and what do you love the most about it when you go through a creative process like this with a client?
So I love kind of obviously the storytelling part of it, and every person has a different story. So it's, you know, first of all, you get to have you sit down, have a really nice chat with someone, and you get to hear what they really care about in life. Often the stories are, really sweet, or they're quite funny, or they're quite quirky. Sometimes they're really sad. And kind of pull elements of those things into, create them into something beautiful. That's really my favorite part of it, is translating those really key elements into something physical that they then go, that's amazing. That's exactly what I wanted. I also love, having finished the ring and then being able to share that story and then have them share it as well, because the jewelry really becomes a talking point for them. It depends on the person, really. Some people keep it quite secret, the meaning of that ring quite secret, and I say ring, but it could be any piece of jewelry is often often a ring. And it's something that they can kind of look down on every day and go, this is exactly who I am, or this is, it makes them happy to see every day. And it's only if they choose to, they can then share that story with someone else. So it's it's a very personal kind of keepsake. Or if, if they're the kind that love to share, to show off their jewelry, it's for them, it can be quite a, conversation starter. I guess my favorite part is just being able to know that I've created something special for someone who then kind of treasures it for years and years. And often that piece of jewelry is the piece of jewelry, it's an engagement ring, or it's that kind of one piece of jewelry that they wear, rather than just one of many.
A statement piece.
Piece that's really meaningful to them as well. So often a lot of the people I work with, they'll come in and they'll say, oh, I actually, this is really weird, but I don't wear any jewelry. And I go, that's actually what almost everyone I work with says to me.
Wow.
And I'm the same, because I'm a jeweler that doesn't really wear any jewelry other than the pieces of jewelry that never kind of leave my body. And that's because I feel like they're more part of me than a piece of, like, an accessory that I take on and off. So I actually don't wear any ring. I don't even wear like a wedding ring or an engagement ring myself. So for these people, because they often don't really own any other pieces of jewelry, it's a really special piece for them.
So can you tell me a little bit about what inspires you? Do you mainly draw inspiration from the stories that people tell you, or do you have particular jewelers that you admire and draw inspiration from, or where else do you get your inspiration?
I actually find this a really difficult question to answer because I don't get inspiration from, I don't often look at other designers. I actually don't look at even other artists a lot. So what I predominantly get inspiration from, like you said, are the people that I work with. Mm-hmm. So from their stories, that's kind of what I use to inspire me. Sometimes they know what style they're after, and sometimes they've got absolutely no idea and they just go, I actually I don't know what I want, but this is the story that I want in it. And then we kind of start from absolute scratch and just create something. So I would say I'm inspired more by the people that I work with, because, you know, those stories are always, they're always so different.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you always feel like you were a creative person, even though you followed, I suppose, a traditional path going to uni and studying communications, which I suppose, you know, that's
semi-creative.
It's quite creative. I studied it myself. But did you always feel like you would work in the arts, or was it something that kind of came later to you?
I did feel that I would work in something with a creative aspect, but did imagine it to be more, more like, yeah, writing, you know, articles and, you know, maybe working on websites. I did when I was a child, I did want to be a dog trainer.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. But it was always going to be something creative, but I thought it would be creative with a practical kind of very logical element around it. Mm-hmm. So I guess, on the scale of creativity, I'm kind of in the middle, like, or maybe slightly to the creative side, but also very kind of practical. At uni, I decided I wanted to study biology just because I was interested in it, but didn't really want to be a biologist. So that's why I didn't. creative, but not, I guess I'm not one of those kind of really dreamy creatives.
Yeah.
That people often think about when they talk about creatives.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I used to love doing bookkeeping, even though I was very bad at it and didn't know how to do it.
And I know that when you wrote to me, you were saying that it took you 5 years to break away from the corporate. So you were working on jewelry for 5 years and working in the corporate world, I think it was 2 days a week, until you eventually made the full-time break into jewelry design.
Yeah, it might have been longer than that. I'm pretty sure it was longer. It might have been 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Well, I was in that role for 9 years.
Wow.
And then maybe 2 years in, I decided to start looking at jewelry as a career, and then stuck around for another 7 or so,
wow,
or so years. Is that right? That can't be right. Maybe it was 5 years. I'm not sure. I don't know what the timeline is anymore.
What eventually made you say, okay, I'm done, I'm going to step out of the corporate world and go all in my jewelry business? What was the final push that made you do that?
So I actually never thought that I would quit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm a very practical person, not one to take big risks. So just leaping into a new, even though it wasn't all that new, leaping into doing jewelry full time, even though that was my dream, just felt like such a big, scary thing. But it was, it kind of all started happening at once. I think I read, or I listened to the audiobook of Tim Ferriss,
the four-hour work week.
and then there were the traffic lights of life will never all be green, at the same time. So if you're waiting for a moment to quit your job, you know, I think it was like just, you know, this is it or something like that. I thought, like, yes, like this is it. But then, you know, that kind of planted the seed. And yeah. Then I, you know, spoke to a friend who just said the right things at the right time, which, you know, obviously people had been saying to me for years, but I needed to hear it at that moment. And then there would have been another person that then said the right things at the right time. I think I was in a, focus group, and I was talking about how I wanted to, you know, my dream was to quit my job and do jewelry full time. And there was this lady who said, oh, don't do that. She said, don't do that. That's not a good idea. I'm like, what? That's way too risky. And I just went, oh, I'm going to do it.
Like, prove you wrong.
Excuse me. Who are you, first of all? And why are you saying these things to me? Because I was very much used to people going, go for it, do it, do it. And I go, no, I can't possibly.
And then this, so it's reverse psychology in the end.
Lady came along and started telling me I couldn't do it. And just like, again, that was the right thing at the right time. Yeah. And then within 3 weeks, I think I had put in my resignation after 9 years in that job. And, it felt great.
Yeah.
It felt so good.
Freedom.
It was amazing.
What do you love the most about working for yourself, would you say?
Ooh, I like being able to wake up and know that I don't have to go into an office.
Yeah.
My dream was always work from home and have a dog that I would hang out with all day. So I did end up getting that. It's hard to say now because, okay, let's talk about pre-baby. It would have been that freedom of being able to do exactly what I wanted all day, which, you know, for me was to work, but work on my own terms.
Yeah.
And then have everything that I achieved, I guess, be something that I created. I guess it was just, it felt good to know that that's what was happening. And so it's, you know, it's a little bit harder now because I can't really say freedom anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe after, when daycare starts, I'll have those 2 days of freedom. We'll see.
Working for yourself on, you know, if you're homebound all the time, as in your office is from home, you've got a home workshop. Do you ever find you get lonely being on your own for many hours of the day?
I don't, probably because I am an introvert. I enjoy working. I loved actually being, so at when I was studying, we had a classroom of people. So you were always working next to someone and having a chat. And I loved that.
Yeah.
But I guess that was when I was studying. When I'm working on projects that really mean something to me and I need to focus, I love being in my own space and being able to, direct my own time and my own schedule. And I feel like I got enough social interaction from talking to customers. Meeting up, so, you know, pre-COVID, I'd meet up with a lot of customers face-to-face. I have a dog, so a lot of the time it would be a dog walk in the morning, dog walk in the afternoon, dog walk in the evening, where you'd run into friends and other dog owners. So I felt like there were those interactions throughout the day that were kind of enough for me to feel like I had seen some faces.
Yeah, sure. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about your jewelry, because it is very different and really is a statement. You know, I think it's something that if I saw a ring like the kind of style that you make on someone's finger, I would definitely comment on it, because it's not what you normally see in the stores. Could you tell us a little bit more about your jewelry?
Yeah, sure. So I love creating pieces from, I guess my favorite gem to work with would be sapphires. So a lot of the pieces that I make feature Australian sapphires or sapphires, you know, from all around the world. Mm-hmm. And I love, so I guess compared to diamonds for me, sapphires are a lot more interesting because with a diamond, even though they are beautiful, often if you put two diamonds, for example, if you put two round diamonds side by side, it's often, it can be quite difficult unless you really start looking at it under magnification to differentiate them. Like it would be easy to drop two of them in front of someone and they wouldn't be able to tell one from the other. Mm-hmm. While with sapphires, they're also distinct. They're really, they've all got, so sapphires come in a lot of different colors beyond the traditional kind of blues that a lot of people would imagine when, you know, someone says the word sapphire. So
all I'm thinking of is Kate Middleton's engagement ring, because that was a sapphire.
That was a blue sapphire. Sapphires can be pink, they can be orange, they can be yellow, they can be green, they can be purple, they can be mixes of colors as well. So Australian sapphires, for example, often come in mixes of greens and yellows and blues, and often they, you can have all those colors in one stone, which I find really special. You know, Tanzanian sapphires come in pinks and purples and blues, you know, often mixed into the one stone as well. So it's, you know, someone might look at a picture, for example, they'll find a picture on Instagram of one of the pieces that I've made and they'll go, I want a stone like that. And I go, well, I can try and find you one that's, you know, I'll do my best. I'll find you one that's as, you know, that's maybe taken your favorite parts of this sapphire, but is, it'll likely look like a completely different stone. It's difficult to find something that looks exactly the same. Whereas in a diamond, you could go, oh, I want a diamond that's round and in this size, and I'd probably be able to find it for you. Unless, of course, it was, you know, a completely strange shape or, you know, let's say if it was a round stone, then I'd probably be able to find it for you. So I just find that really special about sapphires and a lot of other colored gems as well, which is why I tend to use them a lot in my jewelry. Sapphires are also very hard. They're very durable. So they're second in hardness to diamonds, which makes them a great stone for engagement rings and rings that you wear every day and that need to stand the test of time. So they've got two very good characteristics going for them.
For sure. And what about starting the business? Because I assume that sourcing diamonds and sapphires and everything can be quite expensive. Was it hard? Did you have to start with a lot of capital behind you in order to source the items that you needed to create the jewelry?
I didn't. I've always kind of run very lean and always, you know, I self-funded at the beginning. I also applied for a lot of the expense went into setting up a workshop rather than buying the materials for the jewelry, because so I work I do a lot of custom work at the moment. So basically, I don't pay for the stone unless a customer purchases it. So I don't have a huge stockpile. Diamonds and sapphires in a safe. But at the beginning, the biggest expense was setting up a workshop because jewelry equipment is quite expensive, and you need a lot of it to get started. So I put my own money into the business to get things started. I also applied for some grants. So artist grants that really helped me, get everything rolling.
Oh, that's great. Were they state grants or federal?
One of them was the ArtStart grant. I'm not sure if they still have them anymore because it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And that was, it was $10,000 and you could put half of that into setting up, into buying equipment.
Yeah.
I think that was a, I'm not sure. I think it was federal, but don't quote me on that. And then I got another one that was a New South Wales artist grant. Which was a smaller amount, but, you know, anything helps.
Yeah, for sure. And how long would you say it took you to make the money back, make your investment back, would you say? Did it take long? Do you remember?
I mean, probably.
Might have been a while ago now.
I mean, I made the investment back probably in the first year, but I wasn't really, I wasn't necessarily paying myself. And because I had the other corporate job, I didn't feel the need to. But I did kind of, it took me a while, but I realized that not paying myself was kind of holding me back in a sense, because I, it meant, you know, subconsciously that I wasn't taking the business as seriously as I should.
It's more like a hobby.
Yeah, like I didn't believe in the business enough to pay myself. And it wasn't until, so I ended up signing up for a, signing up with a coach, and she was great. She did a lot of kind of mindset work. One of the first things she told me to do was start paying myself, even if it was only, you know, $200 a month. So I started doing that. And, as soon as I started seeing that I was, getting paid for my work and that it was something worth, you know, worth kind of, you know, making money for. It started to feel more serious. I took myself a lot more seriously, gained probably a bit more confidence. I'd say I don't think I gained, you know, a huge amount kind of back then, but enough for me to start growing it a little bit more, and that's kind of when it started started going somewhere, I would say.
yeah It's so interesting, like time and time again doing these interviews for the podcast, people have mentioned having a business coach or a mindset coach as being a pivotal moment in their career that really helped them turn the tables. How did you find your business coach? Because I think finding the right person is obviously quite important.
I kind of woke up one morning and went, I need a business coach. I want to do something more with this business. I need someone to help me. And I went on, I think I went on Facebook. And I can't remember how I found her, actually. It might have been in a Facebook group. And I kind of almost went with the first person that I saw that felt right. Well, I mean, she did feel right, and that's kind of that's why I went with her. She ended up living in the same suburb as me as well.
Oh wow.
Her name is Yvonne Hills, and I just got on a call with her and I decided, yep, that sounds good, that's kind of what I'm looking for right now, and I just signed up, which is odd for me because usually I would, you know, take a month or two to think about it and mull over.
But when it feels right, I guess.
I just felt at that time I knew what I wanted, and I knew what I needed, which was someone to kind of give me a little bit of a push.
Yeah. And how long did you work with her for?
She had it was a group program, and I think it was for 4 months or 6 months. I can't remember. So it wasn't long. And after that, I got another coach. But it was great. I thought it was fantastic.
What were some of the major changes that you made at that stage? Can you remember, aside from paying yourself, were there any other tips you could give to someone who might be starting out now?
I think so her specialty was sales and mindset. So she did talk through, you know, pricing with confidence, developing a little bit of a sales script so that, when you say sales script, that sounds a bit It sounds too salesy.
I know what you're saying. Yeah. When you're like pitching what you do.
Yeah. But having, I guess being able to explain to a customer what the process is a lot more clearly, instead of just going into a conversation with no framework, no guide, and just kind of letting that conversation flow.
Yeah.
So it gave me a lot more structure. One of the things she would also say was, I can't remember what it was, but it was something like, sell it first and then build it.
Ship it and then build it.
Sell it and then build it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I do that now because I do. I work with custom. That makes sense.
Yeah, you do.
But that's not. She didn't inspire me to go into custom. But I actually thought that was one of the things that stuck with me, because it spoke to the value of time, where, you know, I would always want to get something perfect before I then told anyone about it. This highlighted how important it was to kind of get it out there, even though it might not necessarily be perfect.
Yes. I think it also helps you to know that there's a market for it if you sell it first. Like I've heard with a lot of course creators, it's good to just pitch it and see if someone will buy it. And then if they do, you go quickly and you make the course and deliver it. but then it's true. I can't remember who I was listening to a podcast about, and about her course, and she did exactly that. She like pitched it to her newsletter subscribers, and a bunch of people came back and said, yeah, definitely, I want to buy it. They purchased it, and she's like, okay, it's coming out in 2 weeks time. And then she didn't sleep for 2 weeks. Yeah. And she delivered it. It saved her that whole hustle of really hoping to sell something, making something, spending a lot of time in crafting it, and then, you know, launching it and no one buys it and you've wasted all that time. So I think it is possibly a pretty good concept.
Yeah, and that was the context she was talking in as well.
Yeah.
I thought was like it just gave me a bit of a reminder that that I should not sit on things until they're just right, but no one knows about them.
Yeah,
And then spend lots of time creating it, because I think that this is what they want, and then put it out there and find that it's not.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of pricing, like how long has it, you know, taken you to, like I know for me personally, when I started out as a content writer, I definitely undervalued myself and priced myself really low. And looking back, I realize now it's just a confidence thing, not believing in myself. Did it take you long to sort of price your jewelry at what it's really worth, and considering the amount of time that you spend on creating a piece?
Oh, that's a tough one, because I don't even know now if that. often I'll quote into a piece of jewelry X hours of labor, and it'll take me four times longer than that.
Wow.
Just because, I don't know, life.
I want it to be
not everything goes, you know, exactly.
Yeah.
And I also, you know, often don't factor in the time that it takes to go out and buy the materials and do all, you know, all the calculations and all the planning, like draw up these to scale sketches so that I can personally visualize it before I make it. So a lot of work goes into it that isn't kind of factored into the price, I guess. but, you know, it's a work in progress, but I am more confident about it now. I do think it helped me to create a formula that I would then stick to. I have an Excel spreadsheet that I pop all the, you know, the materials and, you know, hours and you know, other people that I have to pay into, and it works out a price from there. And in the past, I would look at the number that it popped out and go, oh, that's looking a bit high. I'm just going to pretend that this person costs a little bit less than that. And I change the numbers. And, oh, maybe this stone won't cost that much. And I change the numbers there. And then, oh, maybe it's not going to take this number of hours. Let's just make that a little bit less. And then I'd kind of you know, use that spreadsheet to do it the practical way, but I've actually kind of manipulated the numbers so that it didn't quite work out properly. So I do that less now.
Yeah, good. And in my experience, the expensive price, if the customer wants it, they'll be willing to pay for it.
If they don't, I guess me not making that piece for a low price is I'm okay with that. So I don't need to make it.
So is this just a spreadsheet that you created yourself to figure out pricing?
Yeah, it's not pretty.
Doesn't matter as long as it functions.
Yeah.
And you said about paying other people, is that suppliers or?
Yeah, so sometimes a lot of time it's a gemstone setter, so the person who secures the stones into the piece of jewellery. Sometimes it's, if the ring isn't made by hand by me in the workshop, sometimes it's done through a 3D printing process.
Oh, wow.
Which is really cool because then, you know, for some customers, they want to be able to visualize it before it's made. And the 3D printing process starts with a model of the jewelry that's a kind of to scale model that you can view on screen from various angles and see what that ring would look like in real life. So, you know.
Do you design that model then?
So that would be one of the suppliers that I would have in the...
Wow. So do they take a sketch of yours and turn it into a 3D?
Yes, they do.
Visual? Yeah. That's really
they
great.
They take a brief. I will, you know, I'll always do a sketch as well, usually from different angles. And then with a few little descriptions and then measurements, and they'll create that 3D model from it.
Wow, that's so fascinating.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it would be. I love 3D printing. It's just changing the way we live, isn't it? So maybe we're coming up to the end now, but it seems like you love being your own boss. Could you ever imagine going back to working for someone else?
No. That idea of it strikes fear in my heart.
It's so true, isn't it?
Yeah, sometimes I have nightmares and it's about being back in an office and it's all gloomy and there are people around me working on computers and, you know, the lights are flickering and then people are asking me for all this stuff and I go, no. It's like when you have dreams about going back to school and having to sit exams and things like that. It's one of those.
I swear, like, once you've had a taste of working for yourself, it's very, very difficult to even dream about or have nightmares about going back to working for someone else ever again.
I used to, you know, on Sunday night, you get that feeling in your stomach. Weekend's over, back to work on Monday.
You never have that when you work for yourself. Yeah.
Because I'm working all the time. No.
Yeah. I was going to say, in fact, when the weekend's ending, you're like, woohoo, tomorrow's Monday and the kids are in daycare.
Yeah, oh yeah, well, maybe in February, that's what I will be saying.
So maybe just to finish off, if you could give one piece of advice to someone who is maybe in a corporate job at the moment and have that little side hustle hobby that they want to turn into a career and make that jump and go all in, what piece of advice would you give them?
All right. So I guess this is something that I would tell myself back in the day. It's that other people have done it. People do it every day. And I don't think they're necessarily smarter or better or that, you know, they're not necessarily geniuses. They're people just like you and me. And if they can do it, so can you. That's what I would say to myself. And they've done it just because they took that step. And they might take that one little step and then, you know, work at that level for a little while. And then they'll take another step, building that confidence and, you know, work at the next level. It's just about doing it, really. Otherwise, you'll otherwise you'll wait 7 years. I started a little bit earlier sometimes, but at the same time, there wasn't really a there wasn't really a better time, I think, for me.
Yeah, that's it. Well, thanks so much, Farina. That was really great. It was brilliant to get an insight into your business and how you've gone along this creative journey and the amazing joy that you bring to people through your pieces. And so if you're a rule breaker and a story maker, you should definitely check out Farina, and I'll put all her details in the show notes and in the outro, her website and socials.
Chatting with Farina really inspired me to continue on my own creative journey and reminded me why I chose this path of entrepreneurship. What a privilege it was to be able to speak to her. So, if you're a rule breaker and story maker, head to her website at Farina Cheng Jewelry. That's FARINACHENG Jewelry.com, or follow her on Insta at Farina Cheng Jewelry. We hope you enjoyed this special International Women's Day episode, and we look forward to sharing with you another exciting chat next week, our 10th episode. Until then, here's to going all in on your creative pursuits.
Thank you for listening to the Committed Creative Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and learned at least one thing that will help you stay on the creative path.
If you liked it, please subscribe, as there's plenty more to come. And we'd love it if you could leave us a review if you found the podcast worthwhile. And if you didn't, please send us your feedback. We're all ears. You can check us out online at redplatypuscreative.com or follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Red Platypus Creative.
Remember, you are not alone in your creativity, and you can make money from your creative pursuits. See you next time when we speak to another creative mind that's committed to making their way work.
Here's to going all in and becoming a committed creative.